You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we don't kiss ass unless we're literally kissing your ass. So, in preparation for this episode, I had to download the outline from Facebook a few minutes ago, and in the Facebook trending topics, it said something about Kit Kats. So I clicked on it, and apparently this is a story where a girl ate Kit Kats with no wafers in them and is now suing Kit Kat for a lifetime supply of Kit Kats. So, I'm not really on Facebook anymore. I'm sure maybe some of the listeners have noticed. I'm sure Daniel and Elliot, you guys have noticed. I'm not really on Twitter, I don't really use Instagram, and this is the reason I don't use it. I'm utterly confused at this story. One, she seems to be really delusional, this girl, for suing over the lifetime supply over eating eight of them. Like, wouldn't you stop after one? Like, why are you continually eating more? And then you're suing over a lifetime supply? That does not seem proportionate. And also, why is this a trending topic? Why is this news? Like, I swear to God, social media exists in this phantom zone where everything in it is just so disconnected from reality. Like, there's no news anymore. Is it just because it's like a bunch of homeless people standing or a bunch of loiterers standing on a city corner and they just run out of things to talk about because they're not actually doing anything all day? I don't know. This is why I'm pretty much done with social media from now on. Joining me today via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Now, Daniel, you're actually monitoring something possibly real and important. You said you're going to be keeping track of the caucuses, right? I mean, you're not making Elliot happy, right?
Elliot has the cock covered. I have the caucus covered, just to be clear about what's going on here. It's unclear if when we're recording this we will get late-breaking caucus news, not that we will be reporting it live anyway, because you'll be hearing this the day after it happens. But something should happen, say Trump wins immediately with 100% of all the vote, then we're gonna talk about that. So I'll be monitoring the caucus news live. By the way, Kit Kat girl, 21-year-old Sema Ahmad, 20-year-old student in Enfield, North London at King's College, Muslim woman. Didn't expect that.
You didn't expect that?
Well, she's eating chocolate and enjoying life, so no, I didn't expect that. And two, I don't hear about them being that litigious of a people. Murdery people, but not that litigious of a people. Am I missing something? Am I just not seeing the lawsuits being brought by the Muslim community?
The premise that I didn't put forward here is this is in England. And in England, the Muslim population is much more empowered socially and culturally through Western means.
No, so they are a litigious people, just in London.
Yeah. You sound like you're from London. That's from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Great. Also, caucus!
Speaking of cock, also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
I have returned to the podcast. I'm very happy. If Trump does win with 100% of the votes, we'll talk about it, and then I think we're going to run and hide. We will become doomsday preppers and just dig a big old tunnel underneath the ground somewhere and just hide out for the next 12 years.
Nah. I'd rather just be a regular prepper. I don't need to be a doomsday prepper. Like, I think the people who would just prep get a little short-shifted with that doomsday monocle.
Monocle, yeah. didn't South Park already handle this with Obama's election last time, where they did the whole episode where everyone was acting like it would be the end of the world? Didn't they handle that already?
Yeah, this might actually be the end of the world, though, to prompt up Elliot's, Justin, Barack Obama, terrible president, don't get me wrong. We're talking about Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
Might be the president of the United States. Donald Trump. Nothing?
I mean, look, I don't like the guy. I don't think he should be president, but honestly, there's not really anyone running I think should be president. So, might as well burn shit to the ground.
Donald Trump.
No.
Wants to deport the Mexicans. Okay.
Don't take it personally, Daniel.
Half of me's gotta go.
I mean, let's be serious. This podcast is about witnessing the farce, right?
Oh, yes.
That will give us 8 years of farce to witness.
Well, I would say 4.5 until we're rounded up for dissent, but yes.
And there's lots more farce to witness besides Donald Trump this week. Let's get to it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. But that Barbie world looks a lot different this week as Mattel has announced that Barbie will now come in new body shapes. Yes, the traditional tall-ass Barbie will be replaced, well, I'm sorry, not replaced, augmented with super tall-ass Barbie, super short-ass Barbie, and, quote, curvy-ass Barbie, which, if you ask me, is more like chubby Barbie. The best-selling doll ever. That is a horrible way to start a paragraph, Time Magazine. The best-selling doll ever now has. Shitty writing. Three new body types, tall, petite, and curvy. Faced with changes in beauty ideals, shifting demographics, and ongoing criticism of Barbie's impossible proportions, Mattel decided to remake the iconic blonde. The new shapes will follow the addition of new skin tones and hair textures in 2015. Combined, the changes give Barbie a range of diverse looks that better reflect 21st century America, as opposed to the other one, which reflected what time period exactly when we were super tall and skinny blondes? The endeavor was so secret the company executives codenamed it Project Dawn, as in Dawn of a New Day, so that even their families wouldn't know that Barbie was getting the most dramatic body transformation in her 57-year history. The new body shapes will be sold online starting January 28th at Barbie.com. and will appear in retail stores later in 2016. Will you gentlemen be lining up to buy the curvy Barbie?
No.
I'm just waiting for when they have curvy Wonder Woman as the reboot and Melissa McCarthy plays Wonder Woman.
Oh, God. I don't want to see that lasso. It's a big lasso. Elliot, why won't you be lining up to buy the new Barbie?
I mean, I'd probably buy like a Ken. But I got no interest in Barbie.
Oh, Ken will still be, by the way, still perfectly proportioned and have no penis.
Yeah, but what's the equivalent of curvy Barbie for Ken?
Dad bod Ken.
Dad bod.
But no. The difference, though, here's the difference, right? I mean, I appreciate that joke, but the difference is they're trying to convince us curvy isn't fat. So dad bod, is dad bod trying to convince us that guys aren't fat?
No, because for men it's a different standard. For men, we can still have He-Man and these impossibly muscled action figures, and that does nothing to boys' psyches. But if we have a too tall Barbie who has impossible proportions, well, that's just going to completely destroy the psyche of women.
Speaking of which, I wasn't going to go here. I was going to rant on the curvy thing, which I will do again in a second. But there's a new thing that's starting to take hold it's really pissing me off. You know, I've heard it over the years, but now people are starting to say it more and more. The idea of an 8-pack. So now a 6-pack isn't good enough. You have to have an 8-pack.
Is that even possible?
Yes. If you're I have an online trainer now for working out, and I talked to him about this, and he said if you're incredibly leaned out, you can have that. But here's the thing even about 6-packs, right? And now this is going to sound like I'm defending these fucking Barbies, but it isn't. There's a genetic predisposition to all of this.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. So even if you work out really hard and you're in really good shape and you have a low body fat percentage, you might not look like, you know, all these models that are out there, all these fitness models, all these athletes that are out there. Not to mention the six pack on a, you know, a linebacker, a defensive tackle, a wide receiver all look different than, you know, from each other and from a fitness model. So there's a whole element here of all of this is dropping context, right?
Well, unbelievably so, but in what specific way are you referring to?
That, what, I mean, we're going to get into this in a second because we have a Lego story here to back this up, but they're not taking into account the aesthetic of the company and the purpose of the company. Now Mattel, this Barbie doll, it's no longer about what Barbie is anymore. It's just a fucking doll that happens to have the name Barbie. That was part of the look. That was part of what they were trying to say Barbie was. They weren't trying to create a beauty standard. That's like saying every movie is saying this is what the world should be like. Like, is Zack Snyder saying everyone should be a bodybuilder? No, but that's his aesthetic because that's what he prefers to look at. That doesn't mean everyone should be a bodybuilder.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element here of why does this fake thing have to reflect reality? When I get a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle doll as a child, sorry, action figure, I don't go, there are no big turtles like this in reality. Like, what the hell? They should make it more human-like. It's a fucking turtle. This is a stylized doll. It's a doll. It's made of plastic.
That's actually a great comparison because when the new Turtles movie came out, people complained that the new Turtles in the Michael Bay produced version looked too black or too inner city or whatever. As if there's one fucking way for the fucking Ninja Turtles to look. This is just their interpretation of it. Like, this is part of the social justice thing, I guess. I don't know. Maybe, Daniel, you can explain this a little bit better than I will. And I still, remind me, I still want to rant on the curvy thing. But, no, I feel very strongly about the curvy thing. But there's this idea now that the audience aesthetic preference should take precedence over, I'm just going to say P words because I've got this microphone so turned up that every fucking P is popping. Audience, you asked for this, audience. Now we're going to get messages, not Justin's too quiet. It's going to be Justin's P's are popping all over the place.
Fucking, buy a pop screen.
Fucking audience, yeah, I'm going to have to, yeah.
With all your pop vinyls.
Yeah, instead of a pop vinyl, I have to buy a pop guard. Audience, it's your fault. Donate more to our Patreon so I can get a pop guard, okay?
Back,
all right?
Let's back this train up. Let's put it back on the track. Get a little chugging along here.
This is how I feel about the curvy thing. It gets me really incensed.
Chuggy choo-choo train. Right
gets
back
me
on
really
top
incensed. But, okay, so before I rant about the curvy thing, we're living in a society now where we think the audience's aesthetic preferences take precedence over the authors, over the artists. Why is that? Is that because we're taught in school it's about how you feel, not what it's about? When you read something, they go, how did that make you feel? How do you feel about that, not what is it about?
Yeah, what do you see in this piece instead of what is in this piece? What theories can we apply to this literature instead of what is the author actually trying to communicate? It's all about you shaping your world with your consciousness, which is disgusting. And in this particular case, I think they are ruining a brand. This is sort of what you were alluding to earlier about them fucking with their own aesthetic.
Yeah.
I think it's even worse than that. Like, if they were just mangling the aesthetic, it goes beyond that. They are taking something that is so iconic. This is the equivalent of Coke going to New Coke and saying, well, it's new and exciting and it reflects the tastes of our generation because they were trying to compete with Pepsi. I think this is going to backfire on Mattel. I think people are going to get pissed off about this. I don't think this is going to be a best-selling thing like they suspect it will be.
So anyway. That would be good if in 5 years everyone looked back and made fun of Curvy Barbie like they make fun of New Coke.
Hopefully.
Okay.
Maybe we're just so far gone as a culture.
Can I rant about the curvy thing now?
You may indeed rant about the curvy thing now.
Okay, so this is something that I first saw on the internet, and it started on the internet, and then it was like in online dating. Like if you look at OkCupid, they ask you your body type, and you can put in your body type, and you can put in like, you know, athletic, slender, bodybuilder.
A little extra?
Yeah, a little extra, all that kind of stuff. And one of the options for women was curvy. And what I started to notice was fat women would put in curvy for their body type. No. No, 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 no. That is not what curvy means. You know who's curvy? Selma Hayek is curvy. Okay?
Funny that I thought Sofia Vergara, and we just both went with Hispanic women.
Well, that's because Hispanic women are very curvy.
Racism.
Okay, yes, it's racist. Fine. I'm giving you a compliment, Spanish women. Take it. Sofia Vergara.
Take it hard.
Penelope Cruz. These are curvy.
We can't name one white woman? One black woman?
Well, no. You want to know who's curvy and a black woman? Serena Williams. Venus Williams is very tall and slender. Serena Williams, have you seen that ass? Have you seen that ass?
Oh, my God.
That ass is bigger than I am. I'm just saying.
In its entirety. Yes.
It is. It's a very nice, it's a very nice ass. If I was about 6'5", 7 feet tall, I would be like, that is a great ass. As of now, it intimidates me because she could kick the shit out of me.
I would get lost in it.
I would. I would be like, there's too much ass that's so great, I'm lost.
How do I handle this? Where do I begin?
But the point is, that is what curvy is. Like, you legitimately have curves, right? There's a shape to you. It's not like your roll of fat is a curve. And it fucking pisses me off that this is what our society has come to. I mean, I'm sorry, it's an insult to women who are, you know, genetically born with that. You know, they're lucky, as we said, Spanish women tend to have that. Or someone like Serena Williams who worked at it. Is it fair for Serena Williams, who worked at it and is curvy, for someone fucking to say they're curvy? And now that's what we culturally accept as curvy?
You know, overweight people are in shape, Justin. Round is a shape. I'm just saying.
I'm using a colloquialism. I mean fit.
Yes, I know. I just like the old Garfield joke.
I'm sorry, this really pisses me off a lot.
What? Something pisses you off about fitness?
Especially,
I don't believe it.
No, it's not just that. I like curvy women, right? I like short, I like that look, the short Spanish women who are curvy like that. I like that. And it pisses me off, especially that's what the problem I had in fucking OkCupid. Search body type, curvy, it's fucking fat women. And I'm like, this isn't what I'm looking for.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
Yeah, no shit. am I the only one who thinks this? Elliot, Daniel, do you agree with me?
Back in my day of online dating, talking 2009 here, curvy was not an option yet. So I didn't really experience this. I do sort of get the modern cultural perception of, you know, real women have curves. We hear that phrase a lot. And then it's a picture of a girl eating a cheeseburger. It's like, you're equating things that I don't think are right. Not that I have things against eating cheeseburgers, but you are not, you are unhealthy, and that is not a good thing. We shouldn't be celebrating that. It's fine to accept your body type if you are curvy, if you are bigger, big boned, taller, whatever it is. You have to accept that as a reality, but there are certain things you don't have to accept as a reality. Like, these are not things that are definitive about you. They either come from choice or non-choice, lethargy, mental issues, whatever it is, but it's things that can be changed about you. And we don't have to accept that.
Well, right. And I just feel like I haven't ranted about something this hard since Tom Brady got the 4-game suspension. So if you're keeping track, audience, things Justin cares about, Tom Brady being suspended and the definition of curvy for women. I mean, I just think, look... Now it's a fitness thing, right? We're going to get to a fitness thing here. Ready? Women who are legitimately curvy and go in the gym and they work out, or, you know, they're athletic like Serena Williams, though I'm sure she lifts a lot of weights to get that fucking strong to kick a tree down. But I love how this has become like a set on Serena Williams, by the way.
I don't see her doing much lumberjacking. Do you?
She could, though. In my dreams, she does.
Yes.
By the way, you know who one of her friends is that she hangs out with? Seriously. Colton Haynes. Like, they hang out. They go out places. It's so weird.
That dude's gay, right?
Huh?
He's gay, right?
He won't say. I think that he's bi, probably.
Because he's like my... That's fucking funny, because he's like my height. He's like 5'6 to 5'8 or whatever. I looked it up. So can you imagine that guy hang out with Serena Williams? Anyway, this is ridiculous right now. My point is, there are women who legitimately work hard to get in shape and to have curves. Look, go on Instagram, look up any fucking of the number of fitness models who think they can make a career off of posting pictures of their curves, right?
Do not Google fucking fitness models. That's not what we're going. I mean, you can in your spare time. It's not what we're commanding you to do.
Yeah, I don't know. Does that exist? That might be interesting porn. Might be interesting porn. But, they work hard to get to where they are. And it's an insult to them for these women to be called curvy. And to say, as you're saying, Daniel, that their body type is okay when it's unhealthy. Look, I'm not saying everyone's going to be a fitness model. That's like saying, you know, we're all going to work as hard as Tom Brady at our diets and our physicality. That's his career. He's paid millions of dollars. It's the same thing with a fitness model. If you want to be a fitness model, you got to design your whole life around it. Fucking do it then. Like, good. More power to you. I'm not going to be in that good of shape because I have other shit I want to do with my life, even though I'm going to be in above average shape. But it's an insult to them. I'm sorry. It's an insult to their profession. It would be like, I don't know, like somebody who throws around the ball in the backyard is not like a bench warmer anymore. Or is like, you get, I don't know. I can't even think of a metaphor to use.
We have stumped the master. He is so flustered that he can't even get out a phrase.
It just offends me. It's like calling yourself a quarterback when you're not Tom Brady. Like, it's ridiculous. Oh, no, you know what it's like?
People who are not Tom Brady do call themselves quarterbacks. I just want to point that. Jay Cutler is called a quarterback. So.
Right. This is what it's like, though. So okay. I'm not going to say where this person is from because I don't want it to get back to them or anything. But there's somebody who goes by the nickname D1. Even that means what? Division I football, even though he never played Division I football. That's an insult to anyone who played Division I football.
Interesting.
That's the same thing here.
All right. Are you okay? Was that cathartic for you?
Actually, it was quite cathartic. Thank you.
Oh, good.
That's why I started this podcast.
Justin rants at the world.
Yeah.
Justin's therapy hour. Indeed. Well, you know what else is cathartic? I don't know how to transition here.
Are you going to say the Lego thing?
Yes. Yes? Well, do you have a better transition?
No, it's not a transition, though. It's like a sub-story to this. It's like, okay, Mattel fucked it up. Oh, here we go. Here's the transition. Mattel fucked it up. Fuck you, Mattel. Here's Lego doing it right.
Here is Lego doing it right. Taking a page out of the, I don't know, inclusive, diverse handbook. This summer, LEGO will release its first ever minifigure that uses a wheelchair, the company says, confirming reports that emerged after one of the toys was seen at a toy fair. German website Zwischen Messenbaut and other LEGO fan outlets published photographs of the figurine at the International Toy Fair in Nuremberg, Germany on Wednesday. It's included in the upcoming Fun at the Park set. The wheelchair is seen being used by a youth wearing a beanie cap and a hoodie. Why is LEGO getting it right and Mattel getting it wrong? Can you explain that to our audience?
Yes, because LEGO is not changing anything about the essentials of their product. It's still a LEGO figure. You can swap out any bottom. You can swap out any top. Elliot, calm down. And you can make it look however you want. They're just basically adding the accessory of a wheelchair, which, you know what? Wheelchairs exist in reality. It makes sense. They would have a wheelchair accessory. The end.
We all know what this is about, by the way. This is about somebody wanting to unveil an X-Men line of Lego toys. That's what the wheelchair's for. So that down the line, you create a Professor Xavier.
That doesn't exist already. Nobody's already done a custom Professor X. Somebody has to have done that already.
Then why would this be news that there's a wheelchair figure?
No, awesome. But that's what I'm saying. Somebody had to have bought the wheelchair already and made a custom Professor X. That's what I'm saying, has been released. This is already out, right?
No, it's coming out.
Oh, well, that will be made within a week of it coming out.
Yeah. You know, if I was a kid, this is me as a child, by the way. If I were to have this wheelchair minifig thing, I would be like, this is lame. And then I would do is constantly pop the minifig guy out of the chair and be like, it's a miracle! I can walk! Oh my god, thank you, stem cell research! Like, that's all I do all day.
I'd probably make him like Stephen Hawking.
It is not how you do Legos.
Stephen Hawking and the Fun in the Park set series?
Yeah.
I'd put the dog in the wheelchair. Yeah.
That's what I would really do, is just put a bunch of ridiculous things in the wheelchair, like how many different things to put in the wheelchair.
I'd trick out the wheelchair. It'd be like Speed Racer wheelchair.
Yeah.
Be fucking awesome.
But that's the point. The figures are still yellow. Have there ever been non-yellow Lego figures?
I think there are.
Hmm.
Now you're pissed.
I'm not pissed. I just don't know how to feel about that. I mean, I guess as long as they have, like, their circle head with the thing on top and they're interchangeable and shit, then it's fine. I mean, can you imagine if Lincoln Logs introduced a square piece?
Lincoln Brick!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Lando Calrissian figure is definitely black.
Okay. Well, that's acceptable. As long as that's the only black figure.
The lone black figure. Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he can... a little figure, isn't there? He was in the Lego movie.
See, at least got a point here.
Who? Mm-hmm.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Vitruvius or Vesuvius or whatever the fuck his name is that I can never say.
Morgan Freeman?
Yeah. Vitruvius. He was black, too.
Very good, Justin. You see color. I'm going to swap stories here because there's a better transition here. But if you don't want to see color, you and your college student have the opportunity to attend a nationwide university-funded white privilege conference.
Now I gotta edit this in a different order when I fucking put it on the website. Like, you're making my job more difficult here.
Called an audible at the line. I'm the Tom Brady of this podcast.
No, you're Peyton Manning in this podcast.
The Peyton Manning of this podcast. Yeah. Yes. No, I was getting there. Major universities, campus reform reports, by the way. Major universities across the country are offering course credit and in some cases even paying the cost for students to attend an annual national event known as the White Privilege Conference. One workshop titled, this is my favorite workshop, by the way, Self-Care and Healing as Change Agents will provide attendees with a safe space to share the emotional burden that comes from being a social justice warrior. Quote, feeling exhausted, burned out from working to dismantle racism and white supremacy and other forms of oppression in organizations, groups, and individuals? Still deeply committed to creating greater equity, inclusion, and social justice in society and in organizations, yet finding yourself at times too weary or overwhelmed to make meaningful change? We all deserve spaces to heal, refuel, and recommit to our vision and goals. So, who's going? One of us needs to go. We need to report back. We need to ask the tough questions.
Who's going
to
pay for it? That's what I want to know.
I'm too white. Like, it's got to be one of you two. If I go, it doesn't work. Like, I was really excited at first. I was like, a white privilege bash. I was like, this sounds like home to me.
I'm going to bring my burning cross. Yeah.
Although I could go and privilege and protest the notion of whiteness and be like, we're not all the same. We're not all the same. How much would that piss people off?
That's what I'm saying. One of us has to go and be an instigator. Be fucking awesome. Ask the tough questions
and then we'll release the video on the web. That'd be awesome.
Yes. It would be great. Ask the tough questions like, why aren't you worrying about more Jewish roofers?
That's an Adam Carolla question.
Yes. Love Adam Carolla.
Yeah, I love how points out that nobody ever complains about like the shitty jobs. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always like, everyone needs to be a director. We need to have more women directors.
Yeah, how about more women fucking set builders?
Yeah, or more women janitors.
Yes, exactly. Some of the other workshops. Racial justice as a spiritual imperative. Reimagining the power of our deepest knowing in our racial justice work.
Oh, God.
Do you even know what the fuck that means?
No, and this is the problem I have, all right? I think this is just going to be called the Justin Rants edition. No, that's not true. It's the Curvy edition. But here's the thing, right? What was the first one you read? Something about agents of change or something?
Self-care and healing as change agents.
Okay, here's the thing. Let's take that sentence, right? And let's remove it from its context. Self-care and healing as change agents. I agree with that.
You understand what it means? Because I'm assuming that they're calling self-care and healing change agents.
Right. So I'm saying to change your own life, take care of yourself, and heal yourself, and your life will change. And that's the problem I have with movements like this. They're so mixed premised that they pervert things that are actually good. Someone healing themselves and caring for themselves is a good thing. But when you make it second-handed, when you make it collectivist, when you make it other-focused, it takes it away. You can't have self-healing at a anti-white privilege bash. That's an oxymoron. So I hate how they've hijacked this language. That's a good thing.
Yes. This is my favorite, by the way, because it includes one of our favorite social justice-y words. Two of them, actually. Ready? Blackness, whiteness, and womenness. By the way, womenness spelled with a Y. Embracing the intersectionality of race and gender practice while building equitable and just relationships toward effective anti-racist.
Honestly, yes, that just sounds like porn. That sounds like the title of a porn.
Intersectionality.
Worst porn ever!
You got black people, you got white people, you got women, and they're being intersectional. That sounds like porn. It's a porn title.
It sounds like a couch from the 70s. And then, yes, so the really crazy thing, the thing that pisses me off about this is not that this conference going on, that's totally fine, but one, you can get credit for this shitty piece of shit conference, and two, most universities are reimbursing students for up to $240 of total expenses, plus hotel and transportation. So, and many of these are publicly funded universities, so tax dollars are being spent to teach this shitty nonsense to kids, and we're paying them to go get drunk and fuck each other at a white privilege conference.
I mean, there's nothing more white privilege than that, is there? Instead of education, you use it as an excuse to get drunk and fuck each other?
Right. Exactly.
So, I mean, that's probably actually, you know, I know you're talking shit about it, but in my experience, that's probably the most white privilege thing they can do. So that's probably the best thing the conference is doing.
Teaching them to embrace the white privilege culture?
Yeah.
Of getting someone else to pay for your shit and then going and fucking?
Isn't that what all rich white kids do? I mean, that's my experience at private school.
Oh, man,
not me personally. I'm not saying I was getting drunk and fucking. As a straight-edge kid, I did neither of those things. But I was sitting outside crying as everyone else did it.
Oh, God, Justin.
I wasn't really
crying.
Oh,
man, I need me some white privilege.
That is a mental picture. Just you crying, the rain coming down. Yeah, the music thing.
Window behind you is guys getting drunk and getting blown in a living room.
Yeah, don't forget the jerking off either.
Into the tears?
That's what I was going for.
Okay. Well, if you can't have white privilege, at least you can have a safe space at a university, especially you, Elliot, safe space for homosexuals, except that a certain university is deemed accepting homosexuality as homophobic. This is from MRC TV. I was blown away by this, but apparently you two think this is old news. The Valdosta State University Office of Social Equity, yes, the Office of Social Equity, offers a four-part safe space training program that teaches tolerating and accepting homosexuality is still a form of homophobia. Yes, there are multiple parts of their training, but basically they teach something called the Riddles scale of homophobia. And the Riddle scale is a continuum of attitudes towards homosexuality. On the scale, numbers between 1 and 4 are homophobic, and numbers between 5 and 8 are positive levels of attitude. So the four homophobic levels are 1, repulsion, 2, pity and heterosexual chauvinism, 3, tolerance, homophobic, 4, acceptance on the homophobic side of the scale. I'm blown away by this story, and you guys are like, why is that? Is this something countered?
I'll explain in a second, but I have a question. I'll let Elliot go first, but I have a question first. So is this called the Riddle Scale because it has something to do with Tom Riddle, a.k.a. Voldemort, which explains the whole thing between him and gay Dumbledore?
Yes, I think that's probably why.
Justin. All right, just wanted to make sure.
Okay, good.
Elliot, you want to explain to Daniel?
I don't even think I can fully wrap my head around it right now. I've spoken about this before, and we have all spoken about this idea of tolerance and why it's faulty. Tolerance, and this is how I've come to understand it, and you can tell me if I have error in my thinking. It's not that you have no moral judgments about another person, about their lifestyle, about their choices, or anything like that. That's not what it means. Tolerance, in my view, means that the virtues of a person, the good things that they have instilled in their character, all of their virtues are so strong that they outweigh whatever their vices might be. That doesn't mean that you like the vices or that you accept the vices necessarily, but it means that the virtue and the goodness that comes from your relationship with this person outweighs the vices. That, to me, is what tolerance means. And what these guys are asking for here, I mean, to say that to accept something is another form of homophobia, what they're really saying is don't look at anyone's virtues. There is no, don't make any judgments at all. You just need to not only accept it, but you need to, and what was the wording that they used? View them as indispensable to society. To society. It is so creepy and so wrong, because there are things that are not tolerable. And yes, there are people that are not tolerable. And that is simply a fact. So if people who go around promoting tolerance as some sort of intrinsic virtue without regard for who these other people are, whether or not their traits or their attributes or their philosophies are worth tolerating, are purporting a false view of what existence is and what we need to do as human beings.
Well done there.
No, I agree with that. But that doesn't really explain, I think, what Daniel was asking. Right, Daniel?
I don't care. I liked it.
I mean, no, it's 100% correct. Like, I don't think any of us could have said it better.
Yeah, no. Couldn't have said it better.
I hate discussions like this of tolerance when it comes, because it drives me nuts. The worst thing that can happen to a gay person living in the United States of America is that you are patronized to death. That's pretty much it. You don't, unless you live in Iran or Saudi Arabia or Syria, where your fingernails are going to get pulled out, where you get thrown off of buildings or set ablaze, you really should not be complaining about a lack of tolerance.
Amen, brother.
So 100% correct. I agree with all that. But Daniel, I want to address your point.
My point.
Mad.
No, it's great. I'm glad someone else is ranting on this episode. It makes me feel better.
Elliot was on fire.
Hey.
I'm flaming. There you go.
Mm-hmm. By the way, brief tangent. I figured out I actually didn't turn up my mic. I turned up the volume on my headphones. So sorry, people who want me to be louder. It's actually probably not louder this week. I don't want to adjust the gain mid-episode, so keep complaining. But Daniel, your question was, why is this an old hat to someone like me? Like, how have I heard this before?
Yeah, I was just blown away by the idea that if you tolerate and accept homosexuality, you are homophobic because you think there is something to tolerate or accept.
Right. And it's probably because I went to Ithaca College and, you know, they were doing all of this stuff before anyone else was doing this stuff. It's, you know, one of the three most liberal universities in the country. So I've just been around this my whole life. But I'm actually going to say something that may swerve you a little bit here. I actually think this is one of their most logically consistent positions.
Weird, but yes, I can see that.
And what I mean by that is, okay, their entire argument is it's part of nature, it's normal, it's not different from anything else, which I refer to Eliot's beautiful argument that, yes, it is different, that's reality, deal with reality. So they're starting from a faulty premise, but if you accept their premise, the idea of saying I have to tolerate something that exists is stupid. It's like saying, I tolerate that tree. Really? You tolerate the fucking tree? The tree just exists. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the tree isn't shoving its branches in another tree's tree hole.
Again, agree with Elliot. I'm just saying, logically consistent at least. That's all I'm saying.
I should have said squirrel hole. Okay. But to highlight something that Elliot alluded to, which I found insane as well about this. So I read the four levels of homophobia, repulsion, pity, tolerance, acceptance, the four versions of positive levels of attitude. The worst, of course, is support. You're just merely supporting them.
How dare
That's
you?
The worst.
How dare you just support someone? I'm here seeing a therapist because no one's ever supported me, and that's the worst level.
That's the worst positive level.
These people.
Yes. Number six is admiration, which is simply acknowledging that being gay and lesbian in our society takes strength. Takes strength, much like Hercules.
Boy, it depends who you're fucking, doesn't it?
That's fucking Rosie O'Donnell. Yeah. Number seven is appreciation. You value the diversity of people and see gay and lesbians as a valid part of that diversity. These people are willing to combat homophobia in themselves and others. In themselves. You appreciate it, but you're still combating homophobia in yourself. Wow. And then number eight, which is what Elliot was alluding to, is nurturance. And this is the definition of nurturance. Assumes that gay and lesbian people are indispensable in our society.
Yeah, okay.
They view gays and lesbians with genuine affection and delight.
Willing
to be allies and advocates.
Not saying this scale is the most logically consistent. I'm saying the idea of if you have to accept something that exists in reality as existing, that's logically consistent. Not this scale. This scale is retarded. This scale reminds me of, what is it called, the Kenzie scale? Where they claim everyone's a little bit gay, and it's like, how gay are you? 1 through 5.
Kinsey scale, and it's 1 through 6.
Whatever the fuck it is. It reminds me of that. It's like, we have to prove everyone's gay to make being gay valid.
It's not, okay. There's a little bit more research behind the Kinsey scale, just to be fair. And it's not that everyone is gay. I think the argument is that most people have some amount of homosexuality in them.
I just disagree with that.
That's fine!
I disagree with that. I think it's conflating issues. You know, you can appreciate the aesthetic of another human being without being sexually attracted to them. Haven't you ever seen even, okay, I'm straight. Sometimes I see women like Serena Williams, right? Okay, I appreciate her aesthetic, but she scares the shit out of me, okay? I'm not sexually attracted to Serena Williams at all, but I appreciate her aesthetic. She has worked hard and I can say, hey, she looks good. That is a good looking woman.
I can see the statue of David without wanting to give it a handy.
Yes.
Like,
mainly because the dick's too small, but yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, to use like fingers. Anyway, speaking of accepting reality and nature.
Oh God. I'm going to rant on this story too.
Justin's favorite story of the week. Oh. This is going to be a little bit of an odd introduction to a story because it's mostly a viral video that on Facebook. This is a video went viral of a team captain on a wrestling team. Named Devin, I won't give his last name because he's a minor. He's a senior with a 27-0 record this year, a young man who earned his 100th career win a few days before this video. He took time to wrestle a younger wrestler with special needs. I assume he has Down syndrome, although it's difficult to tell from this video. And he let the kid with Down syndrome pin him, thus destroying his perfect record and ending his win streak. Of course, this was celebrated in our culture as something that was very brave and took a lot of guts, and the comments are damn near universal. We need more young men like this. How awesome. This is incredible. What a great person to help spread joy, someone wrote. Yet that's not quite the reaction that I got out of Justin. So Justin, what bothers you about this story?
What bothers me about this story? Well, I will say before I say that, I want to say, at least we finally figured out now why the Giants beat the Patriots for the Patriots to go 18-1. It finally makes sense what happened. Belichick
just a kid with Down syndrome pin us?
Yes, Belichick and Brady realized their obligation to society and the league, and they let Eli Manning pin them.
God. Oh, that's low. But awesome. But low. But awesome.
The reason this offends me, as someone who was a high school wrestler, is I think this is an affront to all things strength and all things ability. The purpose of sport is to celebrate the strength of humanity, what we're capable of, what you yourself are capable of. Look, I have a lot of, you know, psychological issues with believing in myself and believing in my validity as a person to achieve my values and go after what I want. But let me tell you, I would be a lot worse if it wasn't for wrestling. Because if there's one sport that forces you to survive on your own and learn your own strength and learn what you're capable of, it's wrestling. And for someone to go out there and say, you know what? I'm undefeated. I'm a captain. I'm a senior. And I'm going to let a kid with Down syndrome pin me? Wow, I can't even believe that. And now here's something that's going to be even more offensive for the people who aren't already pissed off. I had to wrestle girls before.
Do you think
I didn't try? You know what I said? When they were like, are you worried about wrestling a girl? I was like, I'm an equal opportunity ass kicker. And then I went out there, and you know what I did? I did the
submitted.
Most... I did the most embarrassing moves I could think of. So there's a move called the ball and chain where you where you take their hand and you put it between their own legs and you flip them over and pin them. And then there's another leg or there's another move where you put their head in between your legs when you're pinning them. You know what? One girl I did one move to, the other girl I did the other move to.
There's a move called the teabag where you take your – anyway.
Now, I know someone's going to get mad. You just compared being a woman to being having Down syndrome. Yeah, you're right, I did, so I'm going to take that for what it is.
So I also, I'm bothered by these sorts of things, but in the, it's sort of like, I don't know, some objectivists, I think, were bothered by it because he had Down syndrome. I'm not so much bothered by it that, I'm bothered by it in the same way that I'm bothered by people who don't like it when teams run up the score on the other team, right?
Well, it's Which the same, is, that's the same argument I'm using.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to look at it. I'm just trying to nuance it out. That's all. It's basically the same thing. I'm just giving it a little nuance. A little more nuance. Which is, if I'm a team who's being thoroughly trashed by another team, it is more insulting to me that they don't run up the score, that they don't try, that they make us give up for a slaughter rule, than it is for them to run up the score 100 million to 1. Because I want to know my objective evaluation in that sport versus being pitied or versus being fucking handed something to. That gives me no value in life.
Yeah, no, you're exactly correct. It's an insult. It's treating you like a child. You're not another human being.
Yeah.
You're not another man. You're not another adult. You're a child. Oh, I feel bad for you, so I'm going to stop running the score up. No, I want you to run the score up because you know what I can say? I fucking played that team till the end of the game, and you know what? They kicked the shit out of me, but holy shit, they were good, and I tried my hardest.
Yeah.
Now, what about this argument, though? What about the argument that the kid with Down syndrome isn't aware that the other guy let him win? So it's okay, then.
Well, why is it... Who's it for, then? If he's not aware that he let him win, then what the fuck? Who cares? And you messed up my perfect record for nothing. For your own social edification.
Right, and that's the point. That's why it pisses me off. It's you know, this is a sport about self-reliance and independence, and rather than that, they're relying on this second-handed thing. Because now this kid with Down syndrome thinks he legitimately won, right? He isn't aware. Yeah. I don't know. Does anyone know anyone with Down syndrome? I don't know. Is the kid aware that he was allowed to win, or does he think he legitimately won?
It would depend on the severity of it and many other things. There is a high likelihood that he is aware that the other kid let him win. Which I think is even sadder, but yeah.
I don't know, this whole story's retarded.
I have another retarded story. Caucus update.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sorry. That's
okay. Caucus update. With 25% of precincts reporting, Ted Cruz has taken 30% of the vote in Iowa to Trump's 27%. And Rubio following in third with 19% and Carson with 10%. Rand Paul with a surprisingly good 4%.
Wait, what percentage is reporting?
25% reporting.
25%. So that's a good sign for Cruz, right?
It is a good sign for Cruz. Trump should have taken a little bit bigger lead based on the polls here. So that'll be interesting to watch as it develops. On the D side, oh, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I don't care about the D side. What I want to say about this is, I swear to God, if after all this crap and all the consternation you guys gave me at the beginning, I don't even know if I used the right word, but whatever, you guys gave me at the beginning of this episode, if Donald Trump does not win the Iowa caucus, it proves there's something wrong with the media and social media.
Oh, yeah, there, no doubt. If Cruz does not perform that well. Sorry.
No, if Trump doesn't. Yeah,
sorry, yes.
We already know that the majority of people that they poll who came out in support of Donald Trump most of them are not even registered to vote. And that's been shown time and time again. People have researched it and they've shown this. So, I mean, I'm not that worried about it, but I am kind of worried about it.
Yeah. On the Democratic side, with 51% reporting, Hillary Clinton in a slight lead with 51% to Sanders 48%. So Sanders performing better than anticipated in Iowa. So we will monitor that and give you caucus updates throughout the program, but you already know the results. So
and yeah,
this is purely for our own edification.
Yeah, no shit. You're letting the Down syndrome kid pin you right now, Daniel. Here's the thing. I don't know. Maybe it's me, but Bernie Sanders scares the crap out of me a hell of a lot more than Donald Trump. So,
is it because he thinks there should only be one kind of deodorant?
Do you know, well, they interviewed a bunch of Bernie Sanders supporters, and they said, if Bernie doesn't win, who are you going to vote for? Like, who else would you vote for if not Bernie? Do you know who they said?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Why? Yes. Because they are practically in agreement on everything from single-payer health care to banning automatic weapons and all that. So, yeah.
Hooray! Politics are stupid. Let's move on.
So let's move on to something else that's pretty much stupid in our society. Art. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. As we've been doing the last few weeks here, we're going to start with a few reviews. The third thing we're going to review here, Elliot's going to have a lot to say. They've expanded the DC television universe, and I know Elliot's very excited. But yeah. I want to group these first two things together really quickly, and there's a reason I'm going to group them together. And you guys let me know if you've seen either of these. So the two shows I want to talk about very quickly are Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Life and You, Me, and the Apocalypse. Have you guys seen either of these shows?
I watched the premiere of You, Me, and the Apocalypse.
Okay. I had never even heard of it.
Did you watch the Cooper Barrett one?
No, it looks horrible.
Okay. I watched all three of Cooper Barrett on Hulu. As we said, you know, Daniel and I have said before, we have Hulu Plus ad-free, which has changed our lives, so now I can watch things like Cooper Barrett. And then, you know, I watched You, Me, and the Apocalypse also at a different time on Hulu. I would not be watching any of these things if I didn't have this Hulu account.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about the reason I'm linking both these shows together is I had the same response to both of them. And this is the response I'm having to most shows nowadays. And maybe this is just because of the way the production process works, the way, you know, the studio process works. But the response I had was, I like the premise for both of these shows. I like the actors for both of these shows. I can't really knock the production value. But the writing just isn't there. Like, they're both supposed to be funny. And, like, I like the premises. I like the setups. Like, in You, Me, and the Apocalypse, I really like the idea that, you know, Rob Lowe is the devil's advocate. And this, you know, the other nun comes into, or the nun comes in to, you know, be his assistant. And I like the idea of we're not going to show the apocalypse. We're going to show the lead up to it and how these people ended up in the bunker. But as much as I like the premise and I like the actors, there's nothing about it that clicks with me. But I want to watch it because I want to see it do well because it's at least creative and somewhat interesting. Same thing with Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Life. Like, I like the two leads. I really like the female lead. She did an arc on New Girl where she was really good. She has a lot of charisma. You know, you get a good sense from her. And, you know, I like the other characters. I like the setup and everything. But there's just, like, nothing funny about it. And it's like, even though I like all these things, it's like, I sort of like I'm watching a drama without the thematic tension.
Yeah. Yeah, You, Me, and the Apocalypse, to give it a brief setup, it's the end of the world. That would be the brief setup. And these people end up in a bunker, and you find out in the episode how they end up in a bunker. But, and there's some weird mystery things going on, that make no sense in the episode in themselves. But I felt like, yeah, I think it's actually really good to talk about it in terms of drama, because when I was watching You, Me, and the Apocalypse, all I could think was, this is a goofy drama. It's not a comedy. It's a goofy drama.
Yes.
I don't know how you sustain that and keep it interesting, or if this is what people are craving nowadays, but it wasn't. The best part of the entire show was Rob Lowe as the office of the Devil's Advocate, which is basically the priest paid to say why people shouldn't be saints, so that the church doesn't fuck up and make people saints who shouldn't be. By the way, look this up. This was a real office for a short time, in like the 1500s to 1600s. This actually existed. So, well played on their part to dig up this obscure piece of history. But, and Rob Lowe is hysterical, and he's like a whiskey-drinking, cigarette-smoking, swearing priest, which is funny in and of itself, but how do you sustain the interest in that over a season, two seasons, three seasons? I don't know how you do that. So, and the other show just looks awful, so I don't even know why you watch that. But
because I was doing meal prep, and I wanted something to have on while I was, like, cooking in the kitchen.
What is the... Can you tell us what the premise of Cooper Barrett is? Because all I could see is that it's a shitty guy acts in a shitty way with his shitty friends.
Well, it's more the friends are shitty than he's shitty. So it's really a show about millennials. And it's they've all just graduated college, and they're trying to figure out how to make it in the world. But they keep fucking up. But every time they fuck up, Cooper Barrett figures out a way to get out of it.
Great.
So it's sort of, I mean, it's in the vein of Parker Lewis Can't Lose, and it's like Zach Morris in Saved by the Bell, except, you know, Zach Morris actually, you know, had intelligence and actually achieved things. Now, because it's this millennial stuff, it, you know, there's not much that really goes on.
Okay.
All right, yeah, so.
Not interested.
The next show that I want to talk about, it was a two-parter, and that's why we didn't talk about the first part last week, because I don't really think you can look at the two parts detached from each other, is DC released Legends of Tomorrow. This is a show where they took a bunch of side characters from Flash and Arrow, and they put them into a time travel premise where they're trying to stop this guy from rising up and becoming this immortal, from becoming dictator of the world. And all of them were going to be nobodies in their life, and now they have the chance to be legends. I thought it was all right. I'm sure it'll pick up later, but I have the same basic problem I had with it. You know, I had with Arrow. I mean, I feel like Flash is the best one because it actually has some sort of theme to it, and it actually executes it well and has drama. I mean, Arrow has a sort of theme, but it's just not, I don't know, I just don't feel it. Whereas Legends of Tomorrow had elements of both, but I just didn't think it was spectacular. The first episode especially was very expositional.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that it seems to be typical of all of Berlanti's programs. There's a lot of exposition, a lot of getting things set up quickly, so you really don't have that kind of ability to get to, I don't want to say get to know the characters, but to really latch onto what this show is supposed to be about. It's just a very generic, this is the plot, and then over the season, then the layers of the onion start to peel off. But I do think that there are intriguing ideas with this show. Because the premise, in the start of the episode, after he collects these people, Rip Hunter, played by Arthur Darvill, who, if you're a Whovian, you'll recognize him as Rory Williams, one of my favorite companions, actually. He's gathered these people together, people including the Atom, Ray Palmer, Captain Cold, Heatwave, the White Canary, just, you know, the Hawkman, Hawkgirl people we've all seen on the series, especially this past year. And he tells them that he needs their help to travel through time because he needs to stop Vandal Savage. And it's actually quite ingenious because in the beginning he tells them that they're not heroes in the future, they're legends. And so he gets them to come on this mission, and the first mission that they go on, they go back in time, and it doesn't quite pan out the way that they were kind of hoping it would, and somebody gets hurt. And they realize that he's lied to them, they're not actually legends in the future. They're actually nobodies. And in fact, the reason that he picked them was because their lives had minimal to no effect on the bigger timeline whatsoever. And then to top it all off, he's actually kind of a criminal, because he's not supposed to be meddling in the timeline, and his people, the Time Masters, have sent a bounty hunter to come collect him. So there's a lot that goes on. There's the things about trust, working together as a team, which is very typical in an ensemble piece. But I do like that struggle between what is, you know, set in stone, what is a fixed point in time, and what is open to choice. And the decision that, no, we're going to act on choice, we're going to be volitional, and we're going to take control of our fate. We're not just going to be cast aside. So there are a lot of very interesting, very strong themes, I think, that they just don't really dive into, but they're there. And I think that as the show goes on, like you said, Justin, I think it's going to get better. It'll unfold. But yeah, the pilot was, the first part was okay, very expositional. The second one, it got going a little bit more, especially with the twist ending. We want to see who it is, what happens, because I want you guys to watch the show if you get a chance. But there's kind of a twist ending where things just kind of swerve a little bit that you don't, you know, something comes that you don't expect. So we'll see how it's going to go. Hopefully it will get better and it'll get stronger, and they'll really start digging into these themes that they're kind of hinting at.
I actually disagree that there are themes in the show. I think what you're describing is stuff you're seeing in there, but it's all just part of a time travel story. It's purely mechanical. And what you were saying actually really made me think of what I was trying to say when I was talking about the difference between Flash and Arrow. So I think Flash has depth of theme and it has integration of theme. Whereas Arrow, the first season was purely mechanical in the way the first two episodes of Legends of Tomorrow were. And now it has themes in the second, third, and fourth season. The fourth, not as much, but the second and third had really strong themes. But there wasn't a lot of depth and integration to them. And that's the main reason I prefer Flash over Arrow. And I'm worried about Legends of Tomorrow, where I can engage with the Flash. I invest is the word I'm looking for. Invest in the Flash because of that depth, because I can understand what's going on, and I can see it in all the characters, and I get what's going on, and I can empathize with that. But with Arrow, I can't, because I don't see it across the characters, and I don't understand the purpose of everything. It just seems like mechanics a lot. And that was the same thing in this show as well. It was often purely mechanical.
We have to remember, it is just getting started, and pilots can very often be very mechanical, too.
No, I agree. That's why I said the thing about going forward. So, yeah, that is, I think it has potential, but that's my one concern about the DC universe, is I think Flash is the only one that has any sort of depth and integration so far. Speaking of, you know, writing, television writing that has great integration, Whovians, in my opinion, were dealt a ridiculously bad blow, where the news came out that Stephen Moffat will be leaving the show. Now, this has caused them to push back the season that was going to air in 2016 and 2017. So we will still have one more season of Stephen Moffat. But then after that, Stephen Moffat's gone. They're going to find a new showrunner, and we don't know. Oh, no, the new showrunner is the guy who did Torchwood, right?
Chris Chibnall.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys in Torchwood.
Yeah, and he was pretty good on Torchwood, so I'm not too upset. I am upset, though, that Moffat's not going to be doing one of my favorite shows. And then there are questions of if Capaldi's going to continue or not as well. Because usually when the showrunner leaves...
Capaldi gave an interview that said he's not going to stay.
If Moffat leaves?
Yeah. He said it wouldn't be fair to the new writer, is what he said.
Yeah, and that's usually what happens, is they start all over again. It's like a soft reboot with a new doctor.
Yeah.
I think Moffat may have maybe run out of stories to tell, because he finally told the end of the River Song story... You know, he did his whole great arc with Matt Smith, 11. And the arc with 12, Capaldi, hasn't been as spectacular.
No, it really hasn't. And it's a shame, because I had such high hopes for it. And even this last season with Clara, great moments, you know, with her facing the Raven, and then the events of the finale where, you know, she kind of comes back, but then she has to go back. It's really... It hasn't really been that strong. My favorite arc will always be the 11th Doctor, particularly with the pawns. I just think that the themes of it, again, we go back to themes, the storybook, the fairy tale, the childhood friend, the imaginary friend, when you watch that run with the pawns, it constantly comes up. that theme always reemerges. It reoccurs in some way, shape, or form. Whether he's talking to the little baby Stormageddon, when he talks about how we're all stories in the end, when he's telling the story to Amelia, little 7-year-old Amelia, you know, so that she'll remember to bring him back at the wedding. It's incredibly well done. I'm going to miss Stephen Moffat. I'm going to miss him. And I really hope that Chris Chibnall will continue to give that show heart, you know?
Yeah, although this does give Stephen Moffat the potential to do other great things, because the stuff he did before Doctor Who was great too, so I'll be interested to see what kind of stuff Stephen Moffat comes up with.
Well, he's still got the show, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's true too. All right, well, this next story, Elliot, you came up with, right? Or you found. You didn't come up with it. If you came up with this study, I would have been like, you're gone. But do you want to tell the audience a little bit about this study you found?
Yeah. It's stuff that I've spoken before about how much I really, 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 really hate when people try to use Disney characters to kind of promote their own political agendas. But I mean, there was a study, a so-called study, barely any, because half the stuff they say about the movies are just wrong. They talk about the lines that female characters get in Disney princess movies, and they talk about rating the female lines against the male lines, and basically they're trying to say that there's gender inequality even when the films are about princesses. And I hate it because, number one, there's so much to say about it, I can't even gather my thoughts. Look, just because a character doesn't speak doesn't mean that she's not the most important character. I mean, hello, The Fifth Element, Mila Jovovich. Even when she spoke, you didn't understand a single damn word she said, really. But she's very important to the movie.
Lilo Dallas.
Multipass.
But you would never think that somebody would say, oh, well, she's being... that there's gender inequality because Bruce Willis is getting all the lines on her when she's the one driving the film. The examples that they give, you know, stories like Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, even though, and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the movie is called Snow White. It's called Cinderella. It's named after the princesses. It's after the women. The Little Mermaid, same thing. Mulan, they even made reference to the fact that, you know, oh, she only speaks half the time because of da-da-da. And then when you want to point out, it's, first of all, Mulan, she's trying to hide that she is a woman while she's embedded with this army. The Little Mermaid, she had her voice stolen from her. You know, it's so absurd that they try to take classic Disney princesses and Disney characters and try to spin them and twist them to try to, in my view, demean all the good things that Walt Disney has done. I mean, Daniel, when you were down here in Orlando a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you about people who, they come to, like, One Man's Dream, the special museum dedicated to Walt Disney, and they don't even know who he is. I mean, it's heartbreaking and frustrating when you read these kind of articles because it completely misses the point. It so misses the point that whenever I see these kind of stories come up, I just want to throw my TV through a wall.
Even more... in this story, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, but they did not count songs in this. Yeah, so, like, they complain about the words in Frozen, yet did not count the song Let It Go.
Which is everywhere! Literally!
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone knows who Idina Menzel is now. I didn't even know who that was beforehand.
I did, but that's because I was, you know... I did.
James just chimed in on Facebook and said, will we see obese Barbies and Barbies with severe defects in our time?
Defects in our time. Yes.
No, they didn't count songs, which is fucking retarded because, like, I mean, doesn't Mulan have that whole big song too about, like, pretending to be a man? What's that song, Elliot? I've never actually seen Mulan.
No, she sings the song Reflection, which is a concretization of the bigger theme. Her discovery of herself, like not wanting to fit the mold that society has deemed, but she wants to be true to herself.
Same there are a lot of Let It Go, right? Let It Go was the entire theme of the movie, right?
Well, kind of. I think this song Fixer Upper may have been more representative of the film's theme, but Let It Go is the anthem from the film. It's the song.
Yeah, it's all about being gay. Coming out of the closet. That's what, no, that's what Frozen's about. If you don't believe me, fucking watch the movie. The girl is gay and nobody will accept it. That's what the fucking movie's about, alright? You'll never convince me otherwise.
Calm down, Todd Starnes. Calm down.
And then, I mean, you just, it's just so retarded to not count the singing in a Disney movie. And then, like, did Timon and Pumbaa not have that big of part in The Lion King because they sing Hakuna Matata and don't talk much otherwise? Like, what else did Timon and Pumbaa do besides sing Hakuna Matata? But they're
Fart.
Huge. Right. But they're huge characters. And the other thing they don't count here, which actually James pointed out, and he didn't quite say it this way. I'm going to take James's point and make it better because that's what I do. this is a visual medium. So as Elliot just pointed out, even though Ariel doesn't talk for much of the movie because Curvy Ursula stole her voice, she's still the main fucking character, even though Eric's doing all the talking for like 25% of the movie. But that's because what? We're dealing with her struggle of not having a fucking voice.
Yeah.
So to say she doesn't talk, when she's there, you see her. I mean, fuck, do the Transformers talk a lot in Transformers?
Clearly Megan Fox is the main character. She was the one I looked at. James, you did make James's point very interesting, but I think James's example was a fun example, which is, why do you watch the movie Terminator? I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger says, what, I'll be Bach in it, and that's it?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't speak at all. He's clearly the main fucking character.
Right, because you see him the whole fucking movie fighting.
It's his yeah. story.
Yeah.
I mean, did you watch fucking Bloodsport to see Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, be angsty over whether he's gonna win his next fight? No! you see him win the fucking Kumite. That's why you watch Bloodsport. You fucking talk. You don't care about what Jean-Claude Van Damme says.
Kumite. You're so ridiculous.
Speaking of ridiculous, I included a link in here just because I wanted to see how you guys react, because I don't think we've talked enough about the Deadpool marketing campaign. Did you guys watch the Deadpool video about checking yourself for testicular cancer?
Yes. It was glorious.
I like how he's holding the billiard balls in his hand the entire time, just twirling them.
Yeah. I just love the marketing for this movie. Like, I'm going to see this movie, and I'm probably going to be disappointed by it. But I can't think of a better marketed movie.
Yeah, it's doing very well. It's done a lot of innovative things, like also sort of like subversively pitching it as a Valentine's Day romance movie.
Brilliant.
And actually getting women to ask their men to take them to see it.
Brilliant.
Which is awesome and very in character. They should get a ton of credit for the marketing. Whether the movie is going to be good or not, yet to be seen. Ryan Reynolds, highly underrated as a human being.
Yes.
Not just as an actor, as a human being.
Yes. Well, the fact that he would do all these marketing things, like, this is legitimately him. Like, here's the thing about it, too. I have to appreciate that the people involved with this movie believe in this movie. I mean, how many actors have you seen shoot this many promo spots for a movie? The way Ryan Reynolds keeps getting in costume and doing these ridiculous Deadpool videos.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
And I love the emojis. Hashtag skull, piece of poop. What's the last thing? L? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, love it.
Hashtag L. It's awesome.
Okay. Two more stories here in the art section. The first, I want to get your guys' opinions if you think this is going to be good or not. Apparently, it's being reported by Deadline that they're going to make a Nicktoons film. not sure how I feel about this. Because my thing with Nicktoons was there was always, like, a couple I liked, but I hated most of them.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of it as a child because we lived in the middle of bumfuck nowhere.
Oh, that's right, you didn't have cable.
Our cable, well, we had cable. It was 27 channels, and Nickelodeon was not one of them. So, I only watched a little bit of this when I was, you know, so things like Angry Beavers.
Yes.
Okay. Other than, you know, assuming it was a show about Rosie O'Donnell, like, It just was a terrible, terrible TV show.
What? No, hold on. That's one of the good ones.
No. Awful.
No.
Awful.
The episode where he's like, I'm going to punch you into last week. And he punches him into last week. Come on.
Okay, that was time travel. So that's why you liked it. You were like jerking off in front of the TV like, fucking time travel.
That was my first orgasm. How did you know?
No wonder you have problems with women if your first orgasm was to Angry Beavers.
Ah, you took my joke. I set you up for that.
Trauma. So, yeah, shitty.
What are they talking about? Which tunes? Like, I grew up watching, like, Rugrats, Rocko's.
All of them. They're going to put all of them in a fucking movie together.
You and the Rugrats?
Yes, all of them.
Dang.
I think the only one they can't do is Doug because Disney owns Doug now, doesn't it?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right. They can't use Doug.
Yeah.
All right. Cat Doug. They use Cat Doug.
Yeah, I just, all real monsters. I don't know. I don't understand it. Whatever. Let's move on to something that Daniel can talk about here. This is an article on the Wrap, and I figured Daniel would have a lot to say about this.
I know nothing about Wrap. I'm just kidding.
The Wrap, WRAP. This is a Hollywood News. Yeah. This is a Hollywood News site. / Twitter account. And the headline of this article is called Why Star Wars Won't Beat Avatar for Worldwide Box Office Record. And the explanation they give is very simple. They say Star Wars is too American. What say you, Daniel?
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think they're right that it's clearly not going to beat Avatar, and it looks like it may not even beat Titanic at this point, which if you're going with the American argument, though, Titanic... So
I disagree. I think Titanic is super anti-American and super naturalistic.
But, I mean, it can be anti-American. It's funny that I think I can think of something as being anti-American in an American way. Like, I think Titanic is an American kind of film and Avatar is not. But anyway, that I don't even think that's important. It's just, I don't think Star Wars has the worldwide appeal that people think it does, if only because it's a different kind of story. It's a different way of telling stories that doesn't play well in multiple cultures. I think the American kind of films are what these other cultures want to see, the more very stereotypical storytelling, the big explosion, blow it up, whatever nonsense. I don't think it has to do with it being too American. I think people in other countries like that. It's almost like going out for Chinese food or Asian food here. Or, did I say Chinese and Asian? I meant Indian. But, so I don't know. I think it's sad that we can't dethrone Avatar because Avatar fucking sucks, but.
So you don't buy the argument that Avatar is like anti-big business, anti-American values, and that's why it was successful in the world?
I don't think that's why it was successful. I think it was successful because it was innovative and huge. Animated helps, I think. It was just...
What was the Force Awakens rated?
Rated? PG-13. Yeah.
Well, no, what was it rated?
PG-13.
PG-13?
Yes.
And Avatar was only PG?
I think Avatar was PG-13 also.
Was it? Somebody fact check that for me.
I'm looking it up right now.
Because I have a hunch Avatar was only PG. That would be my guess. Although there was a lot of Michelle Rodriguez ass, which is probably worth PG-13 on its own. By the way, curvy woman, Michelle Rodriguez.
Avatar was PG-13.
Okay, I take that back. But I love how another example of a curvy woman is Hispanic.
Yes.
Indeed. Look, just ask yourself one question, guys, all right? How many kids on Halloween night dressed like those blue little boogers from Avatar? How many of them came to your door last year?
It's like zero.
You're in America. That's why.
Zero.
We don't know what happened in the rest of the world. Those little aborigine children, all the children in Africa trick-or-treating.
But how many kids came to your door dressed as Darth Vader or Stormtroopers or Han Solo or lots? So it's not just who tops the box office record worldwide. It's what has the staying power. What story resonates throughout time. Nobody gives two shits about Avatar. Especially now that the second movie has been delayed indefinitely. Which will be
also, by the way, it's fine sort of that this isn't going to take the worldwide box office record. They're going to sell a fuck ton more merchandise than Avatar ever sold. They're going to make at least $1 billion more dollars than Avatar made simply from all the other revenue sources. So, Avatar may take the title because I think it was hyped as this new, innovative, enormous movie. Whereas, by the way, the one thing not talked about in this article is there is a legitimate backlash against Star Wars. I think those people are horrible human beings and should be flogged.
Yeah, just. Fuck them.
But.
Flog them all.
There is a legitimate contingency of people who are just like, ah, fuck Star Wars. Like, I'm not watching Star Wars. That's shit. Or whatever.
Yeah. Who would do that?
Avatar was new. It was innovative. It was big. It was huge. It was supposed to be the most beautiful film ever made.
I think beauty is completely fake. That's why I liked Avatar.
I walked out. It was such a disgusting movie. I didn't pay for it, so that's why I got to walk out.
Oh. No, I watched it all.
Unobtaining. Go fuck yourself.
I have a confession, gentlemen.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
You're straight?
I have never seen Avatar.
Oh. You're not missing much. It's pretty shitty.
You guys hijacked me, though. I was going to make a joke about African children trick-or-treating.
Oh, sand again.
No, even worse than that. So they all come home and they start comparing. What'd you get? Mosquito nets. What'd you get? AK-47s. What'd you get? It's all AIDS cocktails.
God. Racism.
I don't make this shit up. That's what goes on in Africa.
What do Somalian children do at night? Starve. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, let's move on to people who say more offensive stuff than we do. It's time for... Shh, let me have this one. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA blow, Steam rocks, got risk for my firewall. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit.
Caucus update.
As long as Ted Cruz is winning.
Ted Cruz is winning.
Okay.
With 75% of precincts reporting, Ted Cruz holds a slight lead of 28% over Donald Trump's 25% and Marco Rubio's 22%.
This is what I mean. That means he's pretty much going to win.
Cruz? Yeah, probably going to win here with 75%
after all
reporting.
This crap, shut up, Internet. I'm done with the Internet. Fuck you, Internet, except listen to our podcast, which is on the Internet.
Yeah, we can't ever fully be done with the Internet because it's like the motor of this show.
No, Jeb Bush
pulling at 3%, by the way.
Yeah, okay, who cares? Look, when I'm saying I'm done with the Internet, I don't mean like the Internet isn't a valuable tool. It is. But like we're actually like we're sitting here, we're recording, we're doing shit in reality. Like we're going out, we're learning about the world, we're bringing that knowledge to us, to the show. We're not just sitting on Twitter all day. Do you get the difference?
I actually kind of am sitting on Twitter all day, but I get paid to do it. So.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Like, you were telling me today, by the way, Reddit on Reddit is talking about random shit now, but by the way, Daniel was telling me today or the other day about how he uses Instagram to find things. And I was like, by things you mean pictures of attractive women, right? Overly Photoshopped pictures of women, right? Because I can't figure out any other way to use Instagram.
There's lots of ways to use Instagram. I use it to find art, and I use it to, like, Justin called me because a certain pop vinyl that I'm looking for, the Unmasked Kylo Ren, exclusively at Walmart, was starting to show up, and I was like, oh yeah, I know, I saw it on Instagram. He's like, what? Who the fuck do you follow? He's like, no, I didn't follow anyone. What? Yeah, because I just go in the Discovery tab, and I've liked certain pictures on here of, like, pop vinyls and Star Wars stuff, so it shows me related images. And I saw one of that, a guy holding it, and I clicked on it, and it said, got it in the store today, so be on the lookout. So.
I don't know, man. I've never liked photos on Instagram. Or if I do, it's, like, by nerdcore rappers and stuff. And I still, when I go to the Discover tab, it's pictures
just boobs.
Of women. Yeah.
Boobs. But if you view those pictures, it's also fixing your algorithm. So we know what you're looking at on Instagram. But the point is, it's just like Pandora. If you put on a station on Pandora but never click thumb up or thumb down, you're going to get shitty music. But if you use the thumb up and thumb down, you're going to get music that you like.
So what you're telling me is if I go back on Instagram and I block all the annoying women, I won't be spending all of my time blocking all the annoying women?
Is that what I said? I don't think that's what I said.
See, this is the way things get translated in Justin's brain.
Let's read things on Reddit.
Okay. Now, this is a Reddit that's close to my heart, and we've talked about this kind of stuff before.
Porn.
Why is it okay for women to blatantly, or however the fuck this is spelled, say that they won't date short men, whereas men are attacked if they say they won't date an overweight woman?
Curvy one.
Yeah, a curvy woman.
Well, you could just get taller. You tried getting taller?
I'm going to the gym.
Spend more time in the gym.
That's why I got an online trainer. I told him. I said, I saw online that if I want to get taller, I need a trainer. And he said, okay, eat more rice. And I said, got it. Which, surprisingly, I don't know why so many Asians are short then.
Smaller penis. So it's a double standard, and it's a ridiculous double standard. Here's my thing about all standards, though, in dating, which is you can have any standard you want. It's fine, but be prepared to not meet anyone. Because if you hold ridiculous standards and disqualify people based on things that are arbitrary, you're going to miss out on fantastic opportunities. My fiance and I are a quintessential example of, one, I never thought I would date someone who's a Muslim. Like, that was, and that's an ideological thing. That's not even like a short, tall, whatever. Turns out she's a Muslim and she's awesome.
Shallow prick going on things like ideology.
Well, hers, she never thought she would date a white boy. And here I am, and we're awesome and happy.
You're not so white. You fucking don't take our race, you half fucking
half-breed. I am a refried bean. That is what people used to call me in high school. I believe
the correct term is white skin.
I like it. I like it. So, you know, have whatever standards you want, but be prepared to be wildly disappointed. So.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is also to remember that your standards are not everybody's standards, and the standards of people who fuck you over are not everybody's standards. Well, something that I'm, when I look back on my life, like, sick of and wish didn't happen. I'm so sick of people thinking their situation applies to every situation their friend is in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you're going through a divorce because your husband is an abusive prick and we see the abuse on you. That doesn't mean if somebody gets into a fight with their boyfriend and the boyfriend yells that he is also an abuser. There is a big gap there. So I just don't like when people do things like that. Oh, my boyfriend did this and he cheated, therefore your boyfriend's cheating too. Like, are you fucking kidding me? It makes it impossible, nearly impossible to get dating right, because dating sucks as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, earlier when I said you can have whatever standards you want, just don't be prepared to be disappointed, I meant you can have whatever ridiculous standards you want. I'm not advocating for having no standards whatsoever. You should have standards, but if they're arbitrary and ridiculous, prepare to be disappointed.
Well, yeah, and to me, it's also an issue of percentages. And what I mean by that, I'm sure Fiza, am I allowed to say her name? I said it. Your fiance.
Yeah, I've said her name a billion times.
Okay, I don't remember. Whatever. I'm sure she is a certain percentage of your standards, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just so happened to be that you were like 75%. Oh, but then she's Muslim. Do I let the Muslim outweigh the 75%? No, I do not. And then you went ahead. You see what I'm saying?
Got it. That
thing about tolerance.
Yeah.
What I was saying earlier about virtues versus vices. This is another take on that.
Great callback.
Indeed. Yeah. And it's the other thing, though, is that this is delving a little bit into it, maybe. But when I met Fiza, she provided to me different values than even the ones I thought I wanted in a woman. And if you had asked me a priori to design the perfect woman for me, it would have been someone who's not Fiza. And I would have been wildly, wildly wrong and disappointed if I had stuck to that standard. So it's about being open and about not, and I don't mean being open in the sense of like, well, I'll try anything once, but just being open in the sense of I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to correct implicit mistakes in me or in my judgment of something. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yay.
Next Reddit. Someone is pretending that he is an expert in your field. What is the single question you would ask to call him out?
What are you doing in my field?
Oh, God.
That was such a dumb joke.
I liked it a lot.
Elliot, do you want to go here?
Come on. I mean, I've already lost friends on Facebook and probably in real life because they posted smack about Ayn Rand, attributing quotes to her and calling her an evil person for things she never said. And then when I call them on it, they couldn't deal with it, so they just kind of dropped me like a hot potato, both on Facebook and in real life. So I appreciate that consistency. But yeah, I mean, whether it's Ayn Rand or Victor Hugo or Walt Disney, if it's somebody that I'm a huge fan of and you know that I am a huge fan of this person, don't try to step to me with false quotes or saying things that they stood for things they didn't stand for, because I'm going to shut you down.
I'm going to shut you down. So I had a hard time answering this question because I am one of those interdisciplinary freaks who works in multiple fields. And so it was like, yeah, I could ask someone like, oh, what's your Twitter account? If they're like, what's Twitter? It's like, oh, you're clearly not a social media expert. But that's kind of dumb. I don't know. Basically, it would be something along the lines of like, looking at like a Trump person and saying something like, oh man, that guy has great ethos, doesn't he? And if they're just like, oh yeah, just tremendous ethos, I'd be like, you're a fucking fraud. You have no idea what you're talking about. Like, none at all. So it had to be something that has to do with persuasion, I guess. Since I guess that's my ultimate field, but.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that's a good answer.
Yeah. How about you?
See, that's the thing. I have a hard time. I don't know if I can come up with an answer for this, and I think that this is a problem that plagues writers. You know, one of the things I always complain about in LA is there's so many people who say they're writers, but most of them don't know how to write. So it's hard, because I think if there was a question out there, people would be asking it already. Don't you? To sort through this just array of mess of all these people saying they're writers. So I don't know if it's that easy. My sense is it's something about integration. And what I mean by that is integration of, you know, plot, theme, character, setting, and style. But how do you ask that, you know?
Here's my question for your field, mm-hmm. which is simply, what is the best book ever written? And literally every book is acceptable as an answer except Ulysses.
Green Eggs and Ham.
That'd be fine. I'd be like, you're in. You're a writer. But the problem is like 89% of people in your field are going to say Ulysses. And automatically they're disqualified.
Okay.
I haven't read Ulysses, so I...
Good! Here, I will explain to you Ulysses. It can't be explained because it's a rambling piece of garbage shit. There's the synopsis of the book.
Last Reddit. What's the most pointless argument you've been passionately involved in?
Anyone on the internet.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Well, Justin and I have had a long-standing argument about whether or not Star Wars is good. And I feel like I've wasted a lot of energy arguing that it is.
I don't think I've been... You might have been passionately involved in that, but I haven't been.
Yes.
Which probably makes you feel like shit right now, but sorry.
A little bit. That's okay. That's part of it, though. I don't really know. I don't have the nerd arguments. Like, could, fucking a Jedi use the Force to pick up Thor's hammer? Like, who the fuck cares? That's the modern day equivalent of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. I don't care. I would say that one that happens sort of quasi-frequently lately is arguing between two horrible presidential candidates. Like, I find myself putting in too much effort to talk about why Cruz would be better than Rubio, when in reality there's probably about zero difference between Cruz and Rubio. And I don't need to spend any amount of energy discussing why they would one would be better than the other. So, probably something like that.
Deflategate.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I'm being facetious over the top, but I think sports arguments are probably what I would say. Just
who was better, the 85 Bears or the 2001 Patriots?
Yeah.
We'll never know. It's impossible to know.
Yeah. I mean, even fucking who's better, Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, like, first of all, the arguments are obvious at this point. And second of all, does it really fucking matter at the end of the day? Like, who gives a shit? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Exactly.
But I get fucking into that shit, man.
I was about to say, like, who gives a shit? You do.
Dude, if Manning wins the Super Bowl, are you kidding me? Oh.
If Manning gets hit too hard by the Panthers defense, he will turn to dust. So.
Dude, I don't even know where I'm going to watch the game yet. That's how little I've been thinking about this Super Bowl.
At home with my lights off.
Probably. That's where I'm watching the game. By myself, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that putting all the commercials online already?
Yes.
I clicked on one and started watching it. I was like, what? Now there's no purpose to be watching the game. Off, off, off.
Well, if you watch the streaming online, they do this because if you watch the streaming, you don't get the commercials.
Oh, okay.
So there's no way for you to watch them if you watch the streaming. But
okay.
Dude, but the next time, if the Pats do make it to the Super Bowl next time, we need to go back to the boardwalk in, and the three of us just need to have the snacks like you and I did, Dan, and watch the game there.
Yeah, that was good times, other than the whole losing thing.
That was
so
bad.
We won't repeat losing traditions.
We'd better not.
Ending it on an upbeat note.
Hey, they did fire the offensive line coach, so something came out of it.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you don't protect Tom Brady. If you want us to continue... Oh, wait, no, we're not shilling yet. Damn it. All right, what did we learn this week, Daniel?
I learned that this whole idea of accepting homosexuality being homophobic is not really a new argument. But nonetheless... What? That's what I learned this week.
Elliot?
I learned that Ulysses is excrement that has been smeared upon the pages of a book.
The excrement's probably better.
Yeah.
Realistically, has more value to society. But, yes, basically. Justin, what'd you learn?
I learned that I'm actually far more terrified of Serena Williams than I realized. That was, like,
also,
lurking in my subconscious.
Also, secretly want that ass.
No, that's not so secret.
Oh.
I'm an ass guy, dude. That's part of the reason I'm defending curvy women. Like, if you work to get a nice ass, I appreciate you.
Oh my god, there's so many women that you would love.
What?
You need to come down to Orlando because there are so many women that you would love with their asses.
A lot of Hispanics down there.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. So, if you learned something this week, like how much you love the ass, why don't you tell us on iTunes, 5-star rating on the iTunes. iTunes, 5 stars. 5 stars, iTunes. That's a palindrome.
Is it?
No.
Oh.
So, or you could like us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMidSide, twitter.com/TheMidSide, follow us there, tell a friend, and of course, if you are so inclined, like some of our great listeners, you can go to patreon.com/TheMidSide, and you can give us a few bucks per episode, or $1 or 50 cents per episode, and you help us pay for hosting and marketing and hookers and blow, and... not really so much hookers and blow, but a guy can dream. So, but the main thing you can do for us, seriously, and I say this every week, but I'm speaking to you specifically this week, listener. Yes, you, the one perking up right now. Tell a friend. Tell a friend. Just say, hey, I listen to this podcast every week. It's pretty sweet. It has a perfect rating on iTunes. You should listen to it as well. That's how we grow. That's how we sustain. That's how we... create a sustainable environment.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. I learned how to turn up the volume on my mic, which you will have next week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!